Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. This Christmas-themed episode of Luke's English Podcast is sponsored by iTalki, which is a great service that you can use to find native speakers and English teachers for online conversations and English lessons. It's a great way to build your fluency from the comfort of your own home. And when you make a purchase, iTalki will send you a voucher worth 100 iTalki credits, which you can use as a discount. To check out that offer, go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello to everyone in the world. It's the festive time of year again. Christmas is just around the corner. It's just about a week away. And obviously, this is an important time in the UK and in many other places in the world. So here is the annual Luke's English Podcast Christmas episode. I've got a lovely fire going here in the background. It's all warm and cozy. You might be able to hear the sounds of the wood burning in the fireplace there. The conditions are perfect. And it's now a bit of a tradition on this podcast to do an episode devoted to the subject of Christmas every year. So that's what you're going to get in this episode. It's going to be a massive Christmas-themed rambling chat with the one and only Amber Minogue. And we're going to talk about many things, including our plans for this year, the things we usually do at Christmas, our memories of childhood and growing up, spending Christmas with kids and whether you should tell children the truth about Father Christmas, how it feels to work on Christmas Day, weird Christmas routines in my family, the rules of stupid games we play at Christmas, dodgy dad jokes and Christmas crackers, and plenty of other tangents and stories. I wonder what you're doing at this time of year. How do you usually spend the Christmas period? Is it an important time of year in your country, in your family, or for you as an individual? It would be interesting to compare your version of Christmas, wherever you are in the world, with the sort of Christmas that we have. So while you listen to us rambling on in this episode, think about the similarities or differences between your Christmases and our Christmases, and perhaps leave a comment on the page for this episode so that you can share how it is for you. This is quite a long episode, but do listen all the way until the end because I have some other little announcements and things to say, which I will tell you after this mega chat with Amber is finished. There's no need for me to say anything more really as an introduction, so without any further ado, here is my super festive Christmas mega rambling chat with Amber Minogue, and here we go.
What are you doing for Christmas?
Well, I am going back to my parents' place, of course, as usual. Yeah, on the 25th.
With your lady?
With the wife, that's
right. With the wife?
Yeah, so we're going on the 25th.
Christmas is really different in France to England.
Do you think so?
I do, yes.
What's the main difference?
Well, so much stuff because, the food, for a start.
Yeah.
I mean, food's important. Always in France. Mm. But food, I mean, Christmas is all about food. And I think that's true for most people. But in France, like, they have oysters and foie gras, and that is Christmas food. And that's definitely not Christmas food in England.
Oysters and foie gras.
Yeah.
What is foie gras for people who don't know?
Foie gras is like a duck liver pâté.
Basically, they take a duck or loads of ducks and they feed them and feed them and feed them.
They force feed them. Yes, exactly. They force feed them. And it sort of gives them liver disease and makes their livers swell up and become enormous.
And full of fat.
And delicious. Yeah. And
there will be some people listening to this who are animal lovers who find it horrific. It's a bit controversial, isn't it, the duck liver pâté?
Not in France, it's not. They don't care. They love it. I mean, It is delicious, but I try not to eat it, or any animals really. I kind of think eating animals is pretty unnecessary most of the time, not just at Christmas. Don't just eat animals for Christmas. Anyway, what was I saying?
It's duck liver pate. What is it?
Oh yeah, no. So it's controversial in other countries. So like in Britain, there was this advert, this newspaper article not long ago. And in Selfridges, a Knightsbridge, no, Selfridges, which is a big department store in the west of London, and the west of London's big French community, they were selling under the counter, illegally, foie gras.
Under the counter?
Yeah, which means illegally.
Yeah.
To the French, I explained that.
Yeah, you did.
And so they were selling it illegally to the French customers, because for Christmas, foie gras, really important for them.
Yeah.
But it was banned in Selfridges because so many British people think it's cruel and unnecessary, the way that the ducks are kept, the geese are kept.
So they were selling it under the counter?
Yes, for the French clientele. And then the guy who was doing it got found out and sacked. He was denounced.
Oh, really?
All the French people in Knightsbridge were upset.
Because they couldn't get their foie gras.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah, it is an essential part of a French Christmas, isn't it, to have foie gras?
Foie gras, oysters, champagne.
Yeah.
And then the big meal is like the 24th. And I think the big meal in Britain is the 25th.
Definitely.
And then in Britain, rarely we have one extra holiday compared to the French. You know, they don't get Boxing Day.
Yes.
And Boxing Day is the 26th of December.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's shut in England. It's just where you recover.
You carry on, basically, don't you?
You carry on, yeah.
So I guess, what, are we doing the Christmas thing now?
Well, it seems like it. We don't have to.
No, we can.
Let's go with Christmas.
We can. Okay, what we have to do then is go from, you know, the start to the finish and cover the thing in 360 degrees,
right.
I think. And that means, first of all, how do we celebrate Christmas usually in the UK compared to in other places that we know?
Mm-hmm.
And how, as individuals, are you and I... How do we usually celebrate Christmas?
Okay.
Let's start with individually what we do. What is your typical Christmas routine? So, I guess, when does Christmas begin for you?
Well, this is a good question because I am technically Jewish.
Technically.
I mean, I wouldn't have escaped an oven, but I mean, apart I don't do any sort of special events or anything. We didn't sort of grow up very religiously.
Yeah.
But Christmas wasn't a big deal either. Like, it was fun and we'd get presents.
So you used to celebrate Christmas then,
yeah,
in your family?
Yes. My dad's not Jewish, but
okay.
So we did celebrate it, but it wasn't like a sort of mega deal because I lived with my mum and my grandmother.
Yeah.
And it sort of was nice, but there was no real tradition. But
right.
Because I'm Jewish, and also because I've grown up, I've spent Christmas with loads of different people, and I've observed every family has its little traditions.
Mm.
You know, they've all got their little things that they do every single year.
Yeah.
And I don't do those. But now that I'm a mum and I have a son, I want to do them. I'm creating for the first time my traditions.
Right.
So I've given it a lot of thought.
So you've got your own bespoke Christmas that you're designing yourself.
Yes, I'm making Christmas from scratch.
So wait a minute, you said that you've experienced lots of different Christmases with different people.
Yeah.
Is that because you kind of have grown up with spending Christmas in different households?
Well, I did spend Christmas with my mum some years and my dad other years. But then when I was about 18, I stopped going home for Christmas. But then people feel terribly sorry for you when you don't have anywhere to go for Christmas.
So where were you then at Christmas?
Sometimes I was at friends' houses. I'd often go to a friend's house, you know, from university. They'd go home for Christmas and I'd join them for Christmas.
Yeah.
Sometimes I had my own Christmas and I invited other people that didn't really care that much about Christmas.
Yeah.
And they'd come around. And so, yeah, it was different. It was always different.
Mm, okay.
I spent it on my own. I've had a lonely Christmas.
Yeah, I spent a Christmas on my own once.
It was a bit sad.
Yeah, it's not very nice.
It wasn't great. I decided not to do that again.
Okay, yeah. So you've had lots of different types of Christmas, and now being a mum, you're sort of designing your own Christmas, right?
Yeah.
So when does Christmas start then for you?
December.
Just 1st of December?
Totally, yes.
Okay.
It's 1st of December.
Is that at the same time that Christmas seems to start for the rest of the world? I mean,
well, the thing is, shops get Christmassy early because they want to sell stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people, I don't know. I think there are rules about this, but I honestly don't know when other people start their Christmas. Like I said, I just don't know. Shops all start it early, but once the sort of streets are decorated and you can buy a tree in a shop, and I mean, an advent calendar, I mean, this is one of the traditions I'm starting.
Advent calendar.
Definitely. Yes. That starts on the 1st of December.
Yeah.
So why not Christmas?
I think it's probably, I don't know, there are no rules about these things, but I think, If we base it on the sort of religious stuff, then I think probably the 1st of December is when you can officially start to celebrate Christmas, because that's when Advent begins, isn't it? Like the 1st of December, that's when you open the first door on your Advent calendar.
Exactly.
And I think this is the month, that period is called Advent. So there is actually a sort of religious story behind it. But it seems, yeah, the shops want us to do Christmas earlier and earlier.
Yeah.
And it's always a source of great outrage in people that, you know, if you see any Christmas related promotional stuff in the shops in October, then it's just
too soon, outrageous.
It's like, I can't believe there are Christmas decorations up in Tesco's. It's only October.
Well, I think England goes wilder.
Yeah.
Yes, they've got more free reign in Britain. And I think that's because,
when you say free reign,
they can just do whatever they like.
Right.
They're crazy. There's this much greater emphasis, I think, globally in the UK compared to France, on consumerism. Like, I think in the UK, you know, if you don't have any money, your bank says to you, would you like an overdraft? You know, there's this access to borrowing and spending, and people really encourage you to spend. And I think people don't do that as much in France.
Yeah.
And so there's this sort of great sort of feeling of consumerism. So Christmas is very much about like Christmas carols and Tesco's really early. But there's also, like, in France, you can't have sales whenever you want. You know, things can't be reduced in December. The sales start on the second week of January, the second Wednesday of January. And that's by law. Whereas in England, things are already on sale like pre-Christmas. And then you've got that Black Friday, which is an American tradition. So there's this sort of like, we're going to buy everything.
Crazy consumerism out of control. Yeah.
And I think in France, it's still pretty consumery, but it's a bit more restrained.
Yeah. I guess they've just have more regulations in place, which mean that capitalism is slightly more under control, let's say, than it is in the UK, where it's like, you know, that we've pushed it further with a free market economy and, yeah, consumerism rules, it seems.
Yeah, definitely. And just in people's daily attitude, I think in France, generally, people are more likely to buy one nice thing and have it longer. Whereas I think in Britain, I mean, it might be changing, but like in Britain, shops like Primark, which are really, really cheap, you know, they talk about disposable fashion. You know, they'll buy something for a few quid, like a couple of pounds, wear it once and throw it away. And I feel there's less of that in France.
Right, right. Yes, I think I think so. Okay, so despite the fact that some of the shops start trying to make it Christmassy in October or November, I guess Christmas really begins in December. When you do things like open your first window on the advent calendar,
exactly,
or when you see the Christmas decorations in the street, or when you see Christmas trees on sale and all that kind of stuff. Okay.
Exactly. And advent. So this is one of my traditions. I'm making an advent calendar because I don't, you know, I think the environment's important. You shouldn't just buy things and throw them away. So we're making like our own like advent calendar.
And it's
which you can use year in, year out. Like, it's in material. So it's like a big house with little windows,
really?
Little pockets. Yeah.
And what's it made of?
Well, I'm making it at the moment because I saw one and I was like, this is a great idea. Just material. And then so each little door, it's not a door, it's like a little pocket.
Okay.
And you can put a little chocolate or a little present inside.
So it's made of like linen or something?
Yes.
Material. When you say material, you mean like fabric?
Fabric, yeah.
So it's cotton or linen, and they're like these pockets for every day of the Advent period, from the 1st to the 25th.
Exactly.
Okay. And what do you put in the pockets?
You can put, well, different people put different things. You can put a little chocolate or a little treat, or you can put a little present in it. Mm-hmm. So every day you get a little something.
Okay. All right. And we are on the 12th day now, aren't we? Is it the 12th today?
Yes.
I think it is. Okay. So every day, does Hugo pull something out of one of the pockets?
We have just a normal advent calendar at the moment.
Okay.
I'm building up the traditions.
Right.
And so I'm making decisions about them.
Yes.
Yeah.
So next year, the homemade advent calendar is going to be
In
full swing. Okay.
Yep.
All right, then. Have you managed to get your Christmas shopping done yet?
Well, I mean, for Hugo, yes, because that's easy.
Yeah.
Because I like shopping for him. And I don't really buy for many people. But no, I haven't.
Okay.
Just Hugo.
All right. Do you do Father Christmas with Hugo?
Good question. We went back and forth on this, you know, back and forth. In the beginning, I was like, you shouldn't lie to children. Mm. You should tell them the truth, because Christmas is still magical, whether it's a man up a tree, down a chimney.
Down a chimney.
There's a man up a tree. That's just weird.
He's stuck.
What's that man doing in a tree?
What's Santa doing in a tree? He's drunk again.
No, but I thought in the beginning, no, don't lie to them, because it's still sort of magical, even if it's not a person. And then Nick was like, no, we should definitely have Father Christmas. So I had a debate with my students who are 9
yes.
and 10. And I said, should we tell children the truth or lie to them?
So wait, they're 9 or 10. And you, I imagine you, did you check in advance that they were all up to date with the fact that it wasn't true?
Well, at 9 and 10, they know. Besides, next year they're going to go to big school. It'd be pretty embarrassing if they thought Father Christmas was still around.
Did your parents do Father Christmas with you?
Yes.
They did. And do you remember when you discovered that it was just a conspiracy?
More or less, yes. No, I do.
When?
Well, I already had my doubts when I was very young. So I remember noticing a sort of gift, and then I got it for Christmas, and I thought that's weird.
I think you're very shrewd. I think even as a 5-year-old, I imagine like a 5-year-old Amber, like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem to add up.
Yeah, but it was sort of like completely fell apart. I think when I was about, I must have been 7.
Yeah.
I'd already had my doubts for a while, but then I managed to stay awake and I saw my dad.
Oh, you intentionally kept yourself awake in order to observe.
Yeah,
to see with your own eyes.
Yeah, I saw. I witnessed.
And you saw your dad, did you?
I saw him take the stocking.
And he wasn't dressed as Santa, I suppose.
He wasn't. He does have a beard, but that's as far as it goes.
You saw him come in and take the stocking?
Yeah.
And then that was it. That was enough evidence.
Oh, yeah.
Was it? They were like, oh, well, this is obviously bullshit.
Precisely. It's over. It's all over for me.
Santa's dead to me now.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think I had a similar experience where I think the thing was that, you know, I've got an older brother.
Oh, yeah,
I
that's tricky.
I think he clocked before I did. And so I grew up in this atmosphere of like, you know, well, we better leave a mince pie for Santa, wink, wink.
Yeah.
You know, like, why are they being all ironic and weird? You know, so I don't think I ever really thought that it was true. I always got this sense that it was just a joke.
If you could grasp irony at an early age.
I don't think I grasped irony. I just felt like there was this weird other level of like, why is everyone so weird when they talk about Father Christmas?
Yeah.
You know, I remember leaving a carrot for Rudolph the reindeer and leaving a glass of sherry for Father Christmas and this weird sort of atmosphere of my parents being like, oh, don't forget about Father Christmas, you know.
Yeah.
Like, why are you talking like that?
But it is weird. Yeah. I think people feel uncomfortable lying to their children, but then you don't want to sort of ruin it. And then when I spoke to the children, they did say, so some of them said, oh, no, you shouldn't lie. And then when we sort of got down to talking about it, they said, oh, no, you should. Like, it's a great thing, like, we like Father Christmas, and so they gave me the sort of green card or the go ahead.
Your kids did?
The kids that I teach, yeah,
the school kids. So they taught, they convinced you that it was a magical, wonderful thing to lie to your son.
Yeah. They said go for it.
Okay. And so now you chose to go for it.
I think we're going to go for it, but this is part of my plan as well. I'm trying to think it all out. And this is, James gave me this idea.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe everyone does it. I don't know. But you have two stockings. They don't do this in France, you know, stockings.
No.
At the end of the bed.
No, they don't.
But in England, you have a stocking at the end of your bed and trees and presents under the tree.
Yeah.
So the stocking presents are sort of smaller presents, but they are the presents from Santa. So you put your stocking at the end of the bed, it's empty, and you wake up and it's full. Those presents are from Santa, but the presents under the tree are from friends and family.
Right. Yeah, that's what my parents did.
Yeah, so you can say thank you and you don't need to be ungrateful.
Yes.
Like, oh, just Santa did it.
And it's, you know, the real valuable presents that the kids are really looking forward to come from mum and dad and the other members of the family.
Exactly.
But you know, there's like this fun routine of like the excitement that the kids can get on. There's a sort of magic trick which they have to suspend their disbelief a little bit.
Mm.
You know, I think that's the thing, that the kids, they know something's up. They don't really think that Santa's coming down the chimney.
I think maybe they do in the beginning.
Do they really at the beginning?
Yeah.
Okay. But then there's, I guess...
But then everything is magical for them. I mean, like, Hugo's too, and like... Like, we're dinosaurs and wolves and, like, lions, you know, everything is possible. So it's not, it doesn't matter in a way, because Santa is just another one of his many crazed fantasies. It's as plausible as anything else.
Yeah. Okay.
To get him out the bath the other day, I, like, put a headlight on, like, sort of one of those torches that you attach to your head.
Yeah.
And then I put a towel over my head. And I was like, the towel monster, because he wouldn't get out the bath. So I scared him with the towel monster, and Nico rescued him.
Oh, I see.
He knew it was me. But he was genuinely scared. He was like, no, no!
Not the towel monster, no!
Yeah.
And then Nico came in and like, don't worry, Hugo, I'm here to rescue you. And he pulled him out of the bath.
Exactly. Okay. Job's a good'un.
Job's a good'un. Okay. Yeah, I see.
Do you still get a stocking? That was my question.
To be honest, yes.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, because these days, obviously, you know, I live abroad and live away from home and I'm all grown up pretty much. But even now when we go back, my dad's like a little kid these days when we all go back to the family house, and he's all excited, and he's, you know, they still like to arrange little special things, like they often will have stockings.
Well,
for
I think
us.
I think that's what's really nice, because the sort of magic of the stocking, it never goes. And everyone I've spoken to, most of my friends, when they go home, they still have a stocking. Mm. And it's, you know, it's just because it's sweet and it's nice and it's fun, and like, you start your day, you know, it's a special time. And it's, and what's special is not the presents, but the sort of being with the people you love and your family and your friends and, you know, your extended family, like your wife is joining you this time. And what would be sweet is if she has a stocking, which of course she must have if she's part of the fun.
Oh, yes, yes.
But it's brilliant because French people, they don't get stockings.
Yeah, yeah. It's a pity that. I think the stockings are great.
Best bit.
Because... I mean, I remember being a kid waking up and the first thing you see is like the stocking and it's full of stuff. And you're like, oh my God, it is like a magic trick.
Tangerines.
Yeah. But the stuff is usually kind of stupid stuff in the stocking. You know, you get these crappy plastic toys. There's a tangerine, like an orange or an apple or something. There is usually, just little bits of plasticky, stupid kind of cheap stuff. And then the real presents are under the tree and you know who they're from. Mm. Yeah. Okay. So you're doing Father Christmas.
Yeah.
How are you going to deal with the moment when Hugo works out that it's just you and Nico?
That there's no Father Christmas?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to have to cross that bridge when I come to it.
Yeah. Okay. Just sort of like ease the truth in slowly.
Yeah.
He'll be like, what about, tell me the truth about Father Christmas? And you'll be like, you can't handle the truth.
I don't know. Maybe kids are so sophisticated these days, they'll just Google it.
Right, probably.
He'll probably Google it at 3, at 4, and just be like, no, does Santa exist? No. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right, so Christmas shopping, done. Father Christmas, talked about.
Have you done your Christmas shopping?
Some of it. Not all of it. Do a lot of it on the internet these days.
Much better.
With Amazon.
Did you read about the Amazombies?
No.
That was in the Daily Mail.
Amazombies?
Yeah.
Have you been reading the Daily Mail?
Yes.
Oh, Amber.
From time to time.
Well, it's hard to avoid it.
It's true.
It's one of those websites that you just end up on.
Accidentally.
Like, oh God, how did I end up on the Daily Mail's website? So what are Amazombies then?
Amazombies are... basically, the Christmas staff, the workers, they get timed toilet breaks, and they're camping, like in the Amazon grounds. You know, they can't even.
They're sort of sleeping outside the factory, or
They're just slaves. They're slaving away. They are the real elves.
I see. So I've done a lot of shopping, but not all of it. Got to get gifts for everybody. And since we are flying back to England on the 25th, that would be good. But yeah, we're going to have to like pack our bags and pack the gifts in the bags and stuff. It's always a bit complicated.
Get them
like
delivered
flying.
Straight there.
Yeah, should do. We kind of bought a load of gifts. I'm not going to talk about it because my mum might be listening to this.
Okay.
So I better not reveal the presents that we bought. But yeah, we've already got a lot of them, but not all of them. So what are you doing this year? Do you do things on the 24th, the 25th, or the 26th?
Well, for me, Christmas is just the 25th
mm-hmm.
and the 26th.
Right.
But because Nico is French, we'll have like dinner. We'll do something nice on the 24th. But normally in England, the 24th is a big party.
Yeah. Normally in England, the 24th, you go to the pub.
Yeah.
And you meet like your mates or whatever.
People from your neighbourhood that you grew up with.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people have gone to university. Because the thing is, you left home at 18, more or uh-huh. less, gone away to university or live your life. And then for Christmas, everyone would go back. It started, I think, in university. You'd go back for Christmas during the holidays.
Mm.
So you'd meet all your friends at the pub on the 24th.
Yeah.
And then it's the same. You know, you sort of go back to where you grew up and then you meet all those same people at the same pub.
Right. Because in the UK, we go, when you go to university, you leave home and you move to a new city, usually.
Definitely.
Did
yeah.
you move to a different city?
Yeah.
Where did you go?
Brighton. I went to University of Sussex.
Very cool, because Brighton is awesome.
Really, really nice. And yeah. Because I was living in London, last place, I didn't apply to any London university.
Really? You wanted to get out of London?
Definitely. I wanted to move out of home.
Which part of London did you grow up in?
Northwest.
Okay. Yeah. Sort of.
It would have been a massive commute anyway, because London's so big.
Which part of Northwest?
The very, very end of the Northern Line.
Oh, like Harrow.
Edgware. Yeah. Harrow.
Harrow. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a nice part of town.
Quite nice, yeah.
Yeah. But so when you applied for university, you were like, I'm getting out of Dodge. I'm going to get out of London.
Definitely.
And Brighton, you didn't travel very far.
Far enough. You can't commute. Well, you can now. I think people do.
Yeah. It's about 1 hour now on the train to Brighton from
London.
Not
even. I think it's less.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So you moved to Brighton.
Yeah.
All right. So university there. And then, yeah. So the thing was that everyone moves away to different cities, and as you said, at Christmas we come back probably on the 23rd or 24th or something, and then in the pub with all your old mates that you went to school with. So that's the 24th. It's like in the pub and drinking a lot,
loads. Really drinking time. The 24th is just alcohol,
right? Just beer and wine and all that stuff. And then invariably, because the pub is so crowded, it's like incredibly packed, and it's probably cold outside and it's all warm on the inside, and there's all the decorations and Christmas lights on the inside of the pub. And usually there comes a point where it's about 10:30 or something and you're quite drunk, and then the Christmas songs come on the stereo.
Oh yeah.
And you hear, you know, what is it, like all the classic Christmas tracks like Slade, Merry Christmas Everyone, and Wizard, I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day. And everyone starts singing, don't they?
Yes.
You know, and you've got like loads of those classic Christmas songs.
Well, it's a special time because everyone's there for the same reason, and you probably know a lot of people, and there's this sort of nice feeling, you know, where everyone can talk to everyone, which is not normally like that. So everyone starts singing, everyone's quite drunk, everyone's very happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a sort of pretty nice atmosphere going on.
And then 25th, wake up in the morning with a hangover. But of course, because it's Christmas Day, you can start drinking
immediately. you can have a drink with breakfast. You normally would have a cup of tea, but then by 11 o'clock, and you've probably not got up long before that, you can have a drink.
Yeah. And what's the typical drink that you would have at your late breakfast brunch?
Well, people
Christmas
could
Day.
Have a Bloody Mary or a mimosa, you know, like a champagne and orange juice, or you could get straight onto the gin and tonic.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, gin and tonic can go... Depends where you are.
In my house, it's Prosecco.
Oh.
On
keeping it bubbly.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
That is a real traditional Prosecco, cava, champagne, anything bubbly.
Because in England, unlike in France, it's quite rare to drink proper champagne.
Yeah.
And because it's a lot more expensive and it's harder to get. And we have, like, you know, Italian Prosecco and cava, which is, I don't
Spanish.
Know where, Spanish. It's like the Spanish equivalent. Prosecco is like the Italian equivalent of champagne. I'm sure that there's someone out there with technical knowledge about champagne, that champagne only, you can only...
Champagne comes from Champagne, the region.
Right. Champagne is actually a part of France, and you can only call it champagne if it's actually from that specific region.
Exactly. So even if it's exactly the same grapes or production methods, which it can be, really, it can't be champagne.
Right. Okay.
So it's, and that's why cheaper fizz is often delicious and just as good.
Just as good.
But in France, it's different because the champagne, you get 2 for 1. Like, this is the only offer. Like, in England, everything's, you know, the bog-offs, buy one, get one free.
Yeah.
But France, they don't do that. It's all the consumerism, but they do it for champagne. You can buy a bottle of champagne, get another one, and it's a much cheaper than it is in England anyway.
And it's good.
Yeah, it's nice, but I mean, if it's practically the same price as Prosecco and Cava here.
So here it would be champagne, but back home in the UK, for us, it's Cava or it's Prosecco in the morning with maybe some orange juice mixed in.
Yeah.
And not everyone does, you know, like, you know, not everyone in the family is boozing it up, but you can if you want to.
Yeah.
And usually my dad will be in charge of doing the breakfast in the morning of the 25th.
That is usual. Yeah. It's normally the dad's job. I've observed this. Mm-hmm. Dad does breakfast because immediately breakfast finished, mum's doing lunch.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because unfortunately for the mums, usually they have to slave away in the kitchen, not just on the 25th, but sometimes before as well, preparing various things, which then are laid on the table.
Yeah.
So my dad does like eggs and a fry up and bacon and smoked salmon as well sometimes, and we have that, and then it's time to prepare the whole kitchen for the big Christmas meal. And weirdly, in my family, that Christmas meal, the turkey and all the other trimmings, that seems to arrive at this really bizarre hour of like no man's land in the middle of the afternoon,
about 4:30,
something like that.
It's quite late.
Yeah, it's like really late and really early as well at the same time. It's like a very late lunch and a very early dinner.
Well, but that makes sense because you have a sort of late breakfast and then you have like a late lunch. It depends. Some families are more timely, but then a late lunch and then you sort of have leftovers for dinner.
We tend to just have two meals on Christmas Day. There's this late breakfast and then this weird late lunch, early dinner thing.
But you might do like a mini little supper, you know, late.
Usually that happens at about 9:30, 10, when my dad announces that he's going to start picking away at the turkey, which is still in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And he emerges from the kitchen with a plate with lots of turkey and other bits and pieces and loads of English mustard on it.
Yes.
And a fresh glass of red wine. And that's usually announces that, oh, we can now, you know, oh, I do feel a bit peckish.
Yeah.
You know, and then you sort of chow down on some bits of the leftover turkey.
But you're missing various steps here, Luke.
Yes, I am.
Because, I mean, in France already, like Christmas Eve, none of that drinking. When I first moved here, I was working in a bar and we were shut on Christmas Eve and I could not believe it. And I said to the guy that ran it, was English, and I was like, what are we doing shutting on Christmas Eve?
This is in France.
In France, yeah. And he said, well, you know, no one will come out. And I just was like, what? That's not possible. It's the biggest boozing day of the year. He said, not in France. And it's true. I mean, if people are religious, and they are, some of them are, they go to church. They have like a big family meal. Mm. It's their big event. Mm. And maybe other countries, like Catholic countries, because Britain obviously is not Catholic.
Anglican.
Exactly.
Officially.
So maybe it's a sort of like Anglican-Catholic thing, whether the 24th is a big deal or not.
Well, I mean, in my experience, and I grew up in an Anglican household. So until about the age of 10, we went to church.
On the 24th? No. You didn't do a midnight mass?
I mean, just, you know, Sundays, we would go to church until I was about 9 or 10 years old, and then it just stopped happening.
Yeah.
I think my mum and dad basically worked it out. They were like, actually, no, this is... We stopped going to church.
Okay.
But I remember when I was, you know, a pretty small child, going to church on Christmas Eve. So some people in the UK who are churchgoers will go to church for midnight mass on the 24th. And I also remember going to the pub and getting drunk
and then going to midnight mass. Yeah, lots of people do that.
Because there's like, you know, one of my friends is like, let's go to church. And then you end up in church singing.
And it's quite nice.
And you're a bit drunk and it's quite fun.
Yeah.
It's quite a fun way to... Or you're walking home from the pub and you see people going into the church. You're like, come on, let's go in the church. And then you go in, and sometimes they're serving mulled wine in the church, which is like this sort of sweet, heated up, you know, hot wine.
Yeah.
So it's a place to get some nice wine and you can sing songs in there. But no, we don't go to church anymore, but some people do. All right. But in France, people stay at home or they go to church. They don't go out boozing.
Definitely not. I mean, okay, they might go to church late, but they'll have like a big family meal on the 24th. I even believe they open presents on the 24th.
Really?
I think so.
Okay. All right. In Japan, Christmas is not a family thing, really. New Year's Eve is the family celebration in Japan. Mm. And Christmas Eve is when you spend time with your friends or your girlfriend or boyfriend.
Interesting.
It's a kind of a romantic evening in with your partner, Christmas, Christmas okay. Eve. I worked on Christmas Day when I was living in Japan.
Yeah.
That wasn't very
fun.
That
feels weird.
It wasn't right.
I took a flight on Christmas Day. Felt weird.
I felt like my human rights had been infringed in a big way.
So I've worked on Christmas Day as well, actually.
Mm.
Horrible.
Oh, it's not nice.
Oh, no. What were you doing?
I was teaching English.
What?
Yeah, I was there teaching classes.
On Christmas Day?
Bitterly teaching. Like, oh, I suppose I've got to teach you some words then. How about this one?
Bah humbug.
Bah humbug.
Yes. Exactly. That doesn't seem right.
It didn't feel right either. And that evening, I went back to my apartment on my own.
Mm.
And I spent Christmas Day evening on my own.
Why were you so lonely? What happened at this Christmas?
Because no one else was doing anything. The night before Christmas Eve, I went out with my work colleagues and we went for drinks and stuff like that. But Christmas Day, just I had no plans. So I just was at home on my own. I worked until about 9:30 p.m.
What?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is outrageous.
Some of the shifts that I did at the school where I worked were late shifts. You'd finish. I think it was just like, you know, it was a Wednesday or something, you know?
Mm.
So it wasn't a special day. So I remember having a very miserable time sitting on my own in my flat.
Yeah.
You know, I opened a card that I'd got from home or something.
Yes.
But New Year's Eve, amazing time in Japan. That's brilliant fun.
Good.
Yes. So.
So we missed out steps because, first of all, we need to establish what do we eat in England? Like, mm-hmm. what is a traditional meal?
Yeah.
That we eat in England. And then and there's the presents.
Right. When do you open the presents?
Good question.
For us, there's either you open presents before you eat the big meal or after you eat the big meal, you see. And there's always, on Christmas Day, that question is always sort of presented to everyone in the house. Do you want to eat? Do you want to have the presents before or after? And there's everyone like,
you need a
let's
system.
Have them before, let's have them before. So the question is always asked. And the answer is always that we will open the presents before we eat.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I don't even know why my mum bothers to ask the question.
Well, that's why you need a system. You can't just have this. No. One of my friends who I spent Christmas with, her system was this, and it was very good.
Yeah.
Stockings, instantly ripped open, obviously.
Yeah.
Breakfast, champagne, you know, if you want, optional. Mm-hmm. One tree present with breakfast. One.
One tree present early.
Yeah, one tree present with breakfast. Everyone gets to open one present breakfast.
You say tree present because the presents are kept under the
tree. Under the tree, one of the real presents, right?
Right.
One tree present. Then, is it then that we go out for... Well, then it's just general hanging around or whatever. Let me see if I've got this right. Then there was lunch.
Yeah.
Go out for a walk. Take the dogs for a walk.
Sort of walk off the lunch a little bit.
Yeah. Go out, and you can't have lunch too late because otherwise it'll be dark. But lunch, take the dogs for a walk, come home, and that's when the presents were.
Okay.
After lunch, after the walk.
Sort of early evening time.
Well, I think they had lunch quite early. I think perhaps it was, yeah.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about late afternoon, sort of 3 or 4 p.m.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Which is normally where you'd be playing Monopoly or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For us, it's... Yeah, we've dealt with the late breakfast, which kind of ends at about 11:30 or 12:30. And then there's a bit of farting around.
Yeah.
Probably last minute wrapping of presents.
Definitely.
Especially for me and my brother, because we're disorganized.
Mm-hmm.
And then just general sort of helping out in the kitchen going on.
Yeah.
You know, peeling of vegetables. And, you know, all that kind of stuff, generally helping out preparing the food. Different relatives usually would arrive around about lunchtime, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. But we're still preparing all the food. More alcohol is served. Snacks are eaten, crisps and nuts and things like that. Mm-hmm. People then end up congregating either in the kitchen or in the living room. And then the question is raised, do you want to open the presents before dinner or after dinner? And it's obviously before.
Yeah.
So then after we sat around and drank for a little bit, someone goes, so should we better start opening these presents then, I suppose. That's usually the way it's put. Mm-hmm. We better start opening these presents then.
And do you take it in turns?
Well, yeah. So it's usually my job and my brother's job to distribute the presents.
Okay.
So that's from, you know, when we were kids, that we were desperate to, you know, get into the presents.
And,
yeah, exactly. Handle all the presents. So we're still expected to do it. I would quite happily just sit in a chair now and just, you know, drink
but
beer.
You're expected to handle
I'm like,
the gifts.
Oh, all right, I'll do it. And so I have to get up and distribute the presents. And you've got to try to keep the pace going. Because
yeah.
usually there's quite a lot of presents, like a massive pile of gifts.
Right.
My mum has by far the most presents.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Because a lot of them are presents from her friends that get added to the pile.
Okay.
My dad usually buys her tons of presents, which is
really?
Very sweet. Yeah.
That's very nice.
He's probably making up for a lack of attention during the
throughout
year.
Throughout the year, yep.
And so my mum's always got way more gifts than everyone else. And the job of the present distributor, which is me or my brother, would be to try and distribute them evenly so everyone gets a present in turn while also keeping the pace up. And it's rude to open presents at the same time as someone else.
Yeah.
You've got to try and observe the opening of every single present. And
react.
And
ooh.
Reactions, exactly. Ooh, oh, wow, you know, that kind of thing. Usually there's like this long-running joke, which is where someone is given a gift and it's wrapped and other people speculate about what's inside the gift. So, for example, if it's obviously a bottle of wine, so people will be like, oh, I wonder what that is. Mm-hmm. And people will be going, oh, I think it's a football or I think it's an LP record, you know.
Hilarious.
It's, you know, the usual dad jokes.
Yeah.
And yes, okay.
No, it just made me think about dad jokes just
yeah.
then. Because another thing they don't do in France is the crackers.
Right. Well, that happened. Crackers happen at the dinner table, don't
they? Yes, but there's always a dad joke in them.
Always, always. So, yes, that's the present giving, and it lasts for quite a while, probably about an hour. And my mum always has more than everyone else. And then you end up with your little pile of presents, and there's like that slight sense of sort of sadness and melancholy when all the presents are gone. There's that feeling of like, just a little hint of sadness in the air.
Yeah.
Where you realise that all the presents have gone and that's it, you know.
That's it for another year.
Yeah.
All the magic disappeared.
Yeah.
And that's when you start on the gin.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the food is served and we all gather around the table. And yes, there are Christmas crackers laid on the table. And most of the work is done by my mum, but we all help out too by laying the table and setting the table and all that stuff. So yes, there are Christmas crackers around the table. What are Christmas crackers then?
Christmas crackers are traditional in England, not in France. They don't have them, and it used to be impossible to buy them. I'd have to go back to England to get some. They're like cardboard. They're like a little cardboard tube, and on either side is a sort of little bit that you can hold on to. I'm not explaining this very well.
No, it's quite
difficult. Almost like someone's wrapped up a toilet roll.
Yeah.
And in the middle, there's a inside the roll is like a little paper crown, a joke, and often a little toy or a gift.
Yeah.
And there's a device in there. So the idea is that you pull it with someone else and it goes crack, like pops, and one person gets the bigger bit and they win.
That's right. I think the long cardboard tube analogy is quite good. Like, you know, when you finished a kitchen roll and there's a cardboard tube, but it's glittery Christmas card. So it's all shiny and nice. And it's as if two small ribbons have been tied around around the ends. So there's like a section in the middle that's sort of closed off.
Mm.
And you would sort of offer it to the person next to you and you hold on to one end and the other person holds on to the other end and you both pull at the same time and one of the bits is going to break off.
Exactly.
And so the one, as you said, the one who gets the middle section keeps it and they open it and they reveal.
But the idea is that by the end, so you do this before you start lunch, like the main meal, everyone should have a cracker, which they crack with the person next to them, but everyone should win. Even if, you know, you lose twice,
yeah,
you get to keep it. You
That's
know,
right.
It's just distributed because it's shit. And then you all read out the, I mean, you don't want it. And then you all read out the joke and have a laugh. Sometimes there's a game in there, mm-hmm. but then you have to wear the paper crown yeah. while you're eating your Christmas meal.
This kind of flimsy paper hat, either they're yellow or green or red or blue, or whatever. And they're made of really crap sort of, what do you describe it? Crepe paper.
Yeah.
I'm looking for Christmas paper. Cracker jokes.
Oh,
maybe just one, just so that people get the idea of the value.
Well, I've got one.
Go on.
What do you call a cake which hides amongst the other cakes watching them?
What do you call a cake which hides amongst the other cakes watching them?
Yeah.
I don't know.
A mince spy. That's from our play, me and James.
Really?
Yeah.
See, to understand that joke, you have to know what a mince pie is, because a mince pie is a traditional kind of pie that people eat at Christmas. We do have some mince pies in the flat somewhere.
So that's another tradition.
Yeah. So mince pies are like small. They're small. You can shove one into your mouth in one go, probably. You shouldn't, but you can. and they're covered in sugar and they're sweet. And they contain basically sort of like raisins and sugar and maybe bits of nut. And
yep.
It's like, you know, it's
brandy. It's a bit like a thick kind of jammy, raisiny.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
It's a thick, rich, sweet, kind of fruity jam stuff.
Yeah.
And it's dark brown and it's very sweet and really tasty.
And spicy. I mean, like
sort
of...
A bit spicy, yeah.
Yeah, a bit spicy. We'll have things like cinnamon in it.
Right, right, exactly. And that's called a mince pie. And your joke was, what do you call a pie that hides...
Well, a cake that hides and watches.
A cake that hides amongst other cakes and watches them. A mince spy.
Yeah.
Okay, that's very good. So the whole point of Christmas cracker jokes is that they're rubbish.
Yeah.
You know? They're always absolutely awful. Like, for example, what do you get if you cross Santa with a duck? What do you get if you mix Santa with a duck?
Oh,
and the answer is a Christmas quacker.
Oh, yes, of course.
Quack, quack, quack. That's what a duck does, a Christmas quacker. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. How did Scrooge win the football game? How did Scrooge win the football game?
I don't know.
The ghost of Christmas passed.
Oh.
Because obviously to pass is a move in a football
match. But then you
match.
Need to know, because this brings us often to, sorry to interrupt,
That's
another
all right.
tradition. It's full of traditions, and I'm sure everyone's is, but I think Britain is also, as well as the food and the Christmas crackers and the which order you open the presents, a big part is television.
Right. What are the big Christmas television events?
Well, I mean, there's the Queen's speech, obviously.
Yes.
The Queen's speech.
That's when the Queen eats a peach. Thank yeah. you. Carry on.
The Queen's speech. So the Queen comes on television and gives a speech. Everyone watches that.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of reruns, you know, of old movies, like Christmassy movies, or just rubbishy Christmas television, and I don't know necessarily that other people watch as much television, but that joke just there is Charles Dickens'
Scrooge,
which either the Disney version or the more grown-up version will definitely be shown.
The Muppets.
Yeah.
It's the Muppets Christmas Carol with Michael Caine.
Yes.
That's the best version of the Christmas Carol. Or maybe there's an old black and white version as well. I did a Christmas Carol on this podcast last year.
Oh, so they know, people know what it is.
If long-term listeners will know the story, because I did the whole thing last year.
Okay. Well, it's a great story.
It is. It's a fantastic story, isn't it? About how this miserable old man sort of learns that he's a miserable old man and that he understands the spirit of Christmas and he becomes all nice afterwards. It's a nice, heartwarming story, really.
Yeah.
It's quite scary as well in places.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, there are television events. Like in the middle of the afternoon, the Queen comes on the TV and does the speech, as you said. And Doctor Who, there's usually a Doctor Who special.
Doctor Who, there'll be some sort of like celebrities doing something, you know, sort of maybe a bit B-list or just sort of television celebrities.
Right.
Because Britain loves celebrities and TV.
Yeah, we do,
and
don't
Christmas.
We? Yeah.
Put them all together.
Pantomimes.
Pantomime, that's a big Christmas tradition.
These pantomimes, I was explaining this to my students today. It took about half an hour for them to get the concept of a pantomime. Because first of all, they all thought that it was like, mime artists, people who do physical performances without speaking, mime artists. But it's nothing to do with that. Pantomimes are basically like these sort of ridiculous comedy theatre pieces.
Yeah, it's a play, it's a show, but they're very big, you know, they're these very over the top, but there's lots of traditions with them. So there's always a dame, so a man dressed up as a lady, that goes without saying.
Yeah, yeah.
And then lots of sort of, you know, there's lots of interaction with the audience, and especially the call and repeat, you know, she's behind you, oh no she isn't, oh yes she is, you know. So there's lots of opportunity for the audience to get involved in a pantomime, and they tend to be a big story, like Cinderella, you know, that kind of thing. Usually is a popular...
Based on children's fairy tales, like Cinderella, Jack and the Beanstalk, things like that. And so they're based on these old sort of children's stories. And yeah, they're like family entertainment that happen in the theatre. And often there are like these sort of low-level celebrities that take part.
Yep.
And yeah, there's lots of audience interaction. For example, you know, when the evil character takes the stage, everyone goes, boo and hiss.
Yeah.
And there are these things where people say, he's behind you. I don't know where that one comes from.
Well, I don't know. But I mean, we do that in our play. But so there's lots of these traditions, and then people have done it when they were kids, and then they take their kids. But although it's sort of a bit over the top, they're quite smart. They'll often have these lovely sets and, you know, sort of a bit of a celebrity, loads of great costume, and they'll be quite fun, and they'll be in a big theatre, the sort of, you know, the big ones, big theatre, and they've got quite a big budget. You know, they won't be the cheapest thing to go to, but then they will have splashed out on it's quite a show, you know.
I guess there's different levels, because you've got the ones that happen in the big established theatres in London, for example.
Well, all around.
All over the country,
any town which has got a big theatre, they'll have their panto.
And there's usually some sort of star of the panto. For example, some TV celebrity or something. But also you get local town halls doing their own local pantomime.
Yes.
And schools as well will put on pantomimes often.
Yeah.
And at the British Council this Saturday, there was a pantomime, and it was done by the senior teachers and the managers in the school.
Amazing.
And it was absolutely brilliant. It was hilarious. I had no idea what was going on. I did not understand any of it. Because everyone was sort of a bit drunk, and the story didn't make any sense, and there were lots of in jokes about, like, you know, teaching and being senior teachers, and like, so half of it was completely
nonsense.
But it was just really funny to see some of the managers and some of the senior teachers, like the male ones, dressed as women, and you know, some of the stupid stuff that was going on. So yeah, it's very common. The school I used to work in London did that as well. And
have you ever been to a panto?
Yeah. Been to pantos before.
I don't think I've been.
You've never been to one, really?
No, I mean, I think I've seen them on television, but I don't think I've been.
It's good fun.
Yeah, it looks, I mean, yeah, I just, like I said, I've not got any of the real traditions. I'm starting them myself.
Okay. Well, panto is a good one. I think
here they don't have them.
No.
France, where's the panto?
No, it's all serious, kind of.
Too serious.
It?
I don't know what they do.
Because a lot of our culture is about ridiculous nonsense fun, isn't it? I mean, there's obviously serious stuff in there too, but like a lot of the Christmas traditions, like the Christmas songs, the videos of the Christmas songs, the pantomimes, it's sort of self-deprecating, stupid humour. All right, so where are we now on Christmas Day?
So we've opened the presents. I think most people open the presents. They have breakfast, they start drinking, they open the presents, they faff around for a little while.
Yeah.
Then there's lunch.
Right.
Massive lunch. You pull your crackers.
We pull the crackers. We tell the cracker jokes. We put the hats on, and we look at the stupid little gifts that we get. And the gifts are usually things like, you know,
a screwdriver,
a padlock, a fish that sort of tells the future.
Yes. Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. You eat the meal, which is traditionally in England turkey.
Yes.
With stuffing, Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
A contested table choice, but I mean, that's always there, you know, Brussels sprouts. I think those are the staples, aren't they?
Roasted vegetables.
Roasted vegetables. Definitely roast potatoes.
Seasonal roasted vegetables. So a lot of like root vegetables, like carrots and parsnips, potatoes, Brussels sprouts, which are like these little green cabbage things that no one seems to like, but we always have them anyway. I like them.
I like them. Chestnuts.
Yeah. Chestnuts. Yeah, we don't do chestnuts in my house, but a lot of people do.
So things like that.
Gravy.
Tons of gravy. Pies.
Mince pies. Mint sauce. No, not mince
Christmas,
sauce.
Christmas pudding,
which is like this round thing. It's a bit like the stuff that you get in mince pies, basically. And it's full of brandy. And when it's served at the table for pudding, it's covered in brandy in the kitchen. And then it's set on fire.
Yeah.
And it has to be presented with the lights switched off and the whole Christmas pudding burning on fire. And it's supposed to be a really magical moment. It never, ever works.
No.
Because you light it in the kitchen and it's burning and it's like this pathetic little blue flame on the top of it. And by the time you get it into the dining room or the living room or wherever you're serving your food, it's gone out.
Yes.
And it's just like a little wisp of smoke coming off the top. So there's a real art to getting your Christmas pudding on fire and presenting it burning in front of the room. It's about heating up the brandy on the spoon.
Is that right?
Yeah, you've got to fill a large spoon with brandy and then hold a lighter underneath the spoon for ages.
Yeah.
So that the brandy's almost boiling hot, and then you pour it all over the thing and then you light it. I know you're thinking that sounds like a health and safety issue.
No, that's not what I was thinking. I used to make quite a lot of B-52s in this bar that I work in.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a flaming beverage. It's delicious.
Is that a flaming Sambuca? What
no,
is it?
No, it's a B-52. It is Kahlua, Baileys and Cointreau.
Okay.
And you put it in gently so it goes in layers. And then you set the top on fire.
Mm.
And same, there was a real trick to getting it light. So you'd light it on the spoon and then drop it in.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how quick it burns up.
Right.
The alcohol. I think there's more than just the spoon trick, although that is a good one. I think you need quite a lot of brandy, but not so much that you're sort of soaking your cake, because it almost needs to be a bit resistant. Otherwise, all the brandy's going to soak into the cake. I must admit, I don't know the trick.
You need a good dish that will allow the brandy to pool around the pudding.
That's it.
And don't put the brandy on too soon, because it will just be absorbed by the pudding.
Exactly.
So you've got to like slosh brandy over, heat up the thing, bang, lit, in.
I also think whoever's sloshing the brandy, some people might be a bit sort of mean. I think you need to be pretty generous, and it feels like a waste of brandy, so people are not generous enough.
Put loads of brandy all over the damn pudding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically just a medium for brandy.
Yes.
This thing, you know, it's like, it doesn't have that much merit on its own other than just a chance, a way to deliver brandy to people, essentially.
Yes.
Might as well just have a big bowl of brandy in the middle of the table.
Flaming brandy.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's that. So there's the meal. And then after the meal, most people do go for a walk.
Yeah, you walk off the food a little bit. We don't actually on Christmas Day. We usually do our walk on Boxing Day. Christmas Day is usually when everyone just collapses. But we go into the living room and we play games.
That is a tradition. Board games.
Board games or other stupid games.
Pictionary, card games, charades, all of those.
Can you see that little trophy on the middle shelf?
Yeah.
This crappy little golden trophy.
I can.
See that? That is the Christmas games trophy.
You won it.
I won it last year, so I'm the trophy holder.
So, only one person can win the trophy?
Only one person can win the trophy. So this is a thing that my dad has started doing, and it's the it's like the kind of Christmas games, basically, in my family. And he, every year, creates all these different events, and you score points in each event. So actually, this is a fairly new thing that I haven't mentioned yet. And that's that actually, as soon as you arrive now at the house, the events are on. And
does
like
it get competitive?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially,
brilliant.
Especially with my wife, who is deeply competitive.
Is she?
Oh, God, yeah.
Brilliant.
And so there's a lot of heated competitiveness going on.
What's weird is like I love board games and playing games. Like I really, really love them. But it's very hard to find anyone that wants to play. They think it's ridiculous. Apart from at Christmas, people play games. Why don't they play them all year round?
I know. No, she's a massive enthusiast of competitive games, to the point at which she kind of, if she doesn't lose, then if she doesn't win, then it's, you know.
She gets sulky.
No, she doesn't get sulky. She starts to contest the rules. But this year I won the, last year I won the thing. So I'm the trophy holder, but I have to bring it with me this time.
Don't forget.
Yeah.
And I like that. That's a fun tradition.
It's a good one, actually. And if you organise the events in advance, then it makes it more of an occasion.
Yeah.
And the events are like, often it's find the stuff. Like my dad has hidden around the whole house.
Get out.
Yeah. No, in advance, he's hidden in various locations all around the house.
I want to be in your family.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good fun.
I want to spend Christmas with you.
Sugar mice or little chocolate thingies. Like, so there are little chocolate treats or sugary treats hidden.
You couldn't do that in Paris.
Why not?
Too small. I mean, like, the place, do you have a big house? I mean, not big, but I mean, like house.
No, there's a living room. My dad's got an office, kitchen.
I suppose it's not massive. It's just Paris, everything's so small.
Yeah.
If I hid things, you'd find them pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're quite, you know, my dad's quite inventive and finds some interesting hiding
is
places.
Is there like a treasure hunt or do you just hunt them?
It's a treasure hunt. So he
so
says,
clues.
He says there are this many bits of chocolate.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, it's something like the first person to get to three is the winner. Mm. And so, you know, and then he's like, on your marks, get set, go. And we run around the house trying to find them.
Not with clues, just
no clues.
Just looking
no.
for them. It's just hide and seek with chocolate.
It's just hide and seek with chocolate. So there are no clues. Although that's a very good idea. And he did do that once for my birthday. I had a party and he did this treasure hunt thing in the house. Yeah, pretty good.
Your
pretty
dad's good. Amazing.
Pretty good, yeah.
And he buys loads of presents for your mum.
I know, yeah. But, you know, it's Christmas is when he comes into his element. The rest of the year, he's a workaholic, you know.
Not anymore.
Not so much
anymore.
Is that
why he's got all these new traditions? He's filling a void.
I guess so, yeah. It's fine by me.
You're going to go this year. It's out of control.
Yeah, well, I hope so. So there's the find the bits and pieces, and that's fun. Then there's like a memory game where he brings a tray into the living room, and the tray has got like 25 different things on it. Objects from the kitchen, from the, you know, from wherever, like, you know, there's a notepad and a rubber and a bottle opener and a cork and just all these different things on the tray. And it's covered with a dishcloth or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone has a piece of paper. But so what happens is that he reveals the tray for about a minute or 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And everyone scans the tray like crazy, trying to remember everything that's on it. And then the tray gets covered up. And then you get another minute to try and write down all the things you can remember. And the one who gets the most points.
Are you working in a team?
No, you work individually on that one. That's individual.
And what do you win?
Well, you win points. Again,
you win points to get the trophy at the end.
Exactly. It's like the Olympic Games. You're winning points and there's a league table that changes throughout the day
this
or the 2 days.
Amazing. Okay, what next?
Then next there's this what's he calling it? I can't remember. It's basically a potato based sort of fighting game. So everyone is given a spoon, a tablespoon, you know, that you use to eat soup, pretty small spoon, and then a potato, quite a large potato.
Okay.
And you have to you have to balance the potato on the spoon with one hand, and then in your other hand, you've got a rolled up newspaper.
Okay.
And then you have to fight against a competitor, and the aim is to make them drop the potato.
Drop their potato?
Yeah.
What does he call it? Drop the potato?
I can't remember. Like, potato, I don't know. I can't remember what it's called. Like, defend the potato or something like that.
Oh my gosh. There must be techniques.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, I didn't win.
You didn't win that for nothing.
I didn't win it by mistake, let me tell you. So the potato thing is about, on one hand, in one sense.
Is this after dinner?
It sort of can happen
at any moment in the day.
Any time in the day.
Spring a game on you.
Different events happen at different moments. So it's, you know, when the time is right, you know, the different events happen. And so the thing with the potato is that you've got to defend the potato. So it's difficult to hold the potato away from your competitor and keep the potato on the spoon. So you've got to make sure that you're able to hold the spoon straight.
Yeah.
So it's got to be quite close to your body while at the same time taking an offensive strategy with the newspaper.
Mm.
So it's like fencing or kung fu or
potato
something.
Potato fencing.
Yeah.
Excellent. That sounds like a brilliant game. Did he make this up himself?
Yeah.
Where does it come from?
Stuff from his family and stuff like that. Yeah.
I think these traditions should not be lost. Do you know what your dad could do? He could write a book about how to celebrate Christmas.
How to ace Christmas.
This sounds brilliant. I want to do all of these things.
Well, you should. You should take on these games.
That's a reason to have more children.
Yeah.
To have better games.
I think so, yeah.
I was only going to have one, but now...
You need another one.
Yeah.
Just to be able to play the potato game.
Well, because otherwise it's, there's no competition.
Right. Yeah.
It should be Hugo. That's not... It's too easy.
It's too easy, isn't it?
You can barely hold a potato.
Yeah, just... Yeah, that's right.
I'd always win.
Just give him a really big potato. He's not strong enough to keep it on the spoon.
Motor skills are rubbish. Yeah. Okay, cool. That sounds like a brilliant game.
Yeah. And then there's the name game, which is my thing.
You bring in some games.
My dad delegates the name game to me.
What game's that?
And the name, it's really easy. I'm sure you've played a similar version before, but the name game is an absolute classic. It's brilliant. So there's either the 3-round version or the 4-round version.
I already know. We call it the petit papier, the little papers.
Maybe.
You put like famous people or names of people into a pot in the middle.
Yeah.
And then you have 3 rounds, potentially. So everyone writes down like 5 names, or if you love the game as much as I do, 20.
Yes.
20 names, you put them all in the pot. It's amazing how many repeats you get.
Yeah.
They need to be people that everyone's heard of. And this can be really difficult for your girlfriend as a French person.
Yeah.
Because whenever I play with Nico, he's always like, who's Damien Hirst? Or like, who's Florence Nightingale?
Right.
People we all know. But anyway, so it's the idea, it's people everyone knows. So normally famous people or, people to the family might know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As in the first round, you have, is it a minute? You need to tell your partner, because you work with a partner. You take a paper and you have to tell them, you've got a minute to tell them as many names as you can. Mm-hmm. And you get points for each name.
But the way that you get points is by explaining who the person is without saying the name.
Yeah, you can't say the name.
So, for example, I could say, so this is an actor, he's British, and he's got a really weird name.
Idris Elba.
And he's in Sherlock. He's the Sherlock actor.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes. And then the next one.
Why didn't you just say Sherlock to start with?
Well, good point. Good point.
Come on.
Good point. And so that's round one.
Exactly. So as many as you can in 1 minute. And the better you are at sort of... The thing is, it's a strategy game. Because you need to create a rapport with your partner so that you'll be able to understand these again and again, especially if there are funny names in there.
Yeah.
So you need to get a hook for the next round.
So round two...
Yeah.
Then
round two, one word.
It's the same thing, but instead of describing the person, you have one single word to help your partner guess the person.
Exactly. So if Cumberbatch came out and I had that, all I'd say is Sherlock.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you'd say Benedict Cumberbatch.
Exactly. And it's the same names again. So basically round one finishes when all the names have been done.
So you need to listen carefully, especially to people you don't know who they are.
Yeah.
Because that can really mess you up.
And it's really funny because the people's choice of the one word to elicit the person's name is often quite funny.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, like if it's François Hollande, the French president, the word for my wife would be like tie, because she hates the fact that François Hollande can't wear a tie straight. His tie is always wonky.
Okay.
And it's like the thing that really bugs her about the president.
But only you'd know that, because if she was my partner and she said tie, I wouldn't get it. So there's this, you've got to, and that's it. Sometimes you have to break up complicit teams.
Yeah.
So you don't do it with your girlfriend or boyfriend or your brother or sister.
Yeah. Yeah,
because you know each other too well.
Yeah.
And you communicate on a sort of different way.
Right.
So that's the second round, which is really fun and can be really challenging, especially if all you know about them is that they're a writer or an actor, because they're all writers and actors.
Yeah.
And then the third round is mime.
That's right. So we mentioned the word mime before. Mime is when you basically can't use any words. You can't speak. You can just do sort of mimes or actions. So for Benedict Cumberbatch, what would be your mime? How would, can
I'd
you describe?
Smoke a pipe.
You'd smoke a pipe.
Yeah.
Because Sherlock Holmes smokes a pipe.
And or play a violin afterwards.
Or use a magnifying glass to look for evidence.
Exactly. So you can use, with the mime round, you can do as many actions as you can, as possible.
Yeah.
But again, you're trying to get as many names. So once you found that hook, yeah, if you can find it in round one, you're sorted for the rest of the round.
So for Francois Hollande, the mime would be just a wonky tie, a guy
exactly
speaking with a bad tie. And it's really funny seeing what happens.
But that's why trying to make it as sort of like distinctive as possible. Mm. I mean, because if you had, like, instead of Benedict Cumberbatch, Idris Elba, it's yeah hard because he's been in sort of lots of things and he's just like a great actor. You know, you'd need, you would want to establish, you wouldn't want to just say, oh, you know, a great actor and he was in The Wire and all of this. You'd want to find something really clever.
Thing about Idris Elba is that the big story about him is that he
gonna be Bond.
There was a rumor that he was going to be James Bond. And because he's black, that was somehow a controversial decision or a controversial idea.
Yeah.
And so I guess the thing with Idris Elba is you'd say, he's a British actor, he's brilliant, he's like really handsome, and he was going to be James Bond, but he's black.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, Idris Elba, yes, exactly.
Exactly.
And then the one word one would be what?
Bond?
Bond, maybe? Bond with a questioning
Bond?
Internet. Bond?
Bond?
Bond, Bond, like that. And then I guess the way that that would be mimed.
You'd have to mime Bond.
You'd have to do James Bond. But how would you mime a black James Bond?
But then you could just do Bond. But this is the problem. If someone else had put in another Bond, I mean, someone might have put in James Bond.
Yeah, Sean Connery or something, yeah.
Or just James Bond.
Right.
Because Bond himself, like Sherlock Holmes, like someone could put in Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
So if Cumberbatch was in there and Sherlock Holmes, that's when you run into troubles. And
right,
that's when you've got to be clever
yeah
with your hooks.
Right, I see.
We've talked quite a long time about this game.
We
both obviously enjoy it a lot.
Absolutely fantastic game, that's why. And my listeners should try playing it.
It's a good
absolutely
game, yeah,
brilliant. The fourth round, optional.
Right, I don't do this fourth round, tell me more.
Optional fourth round is the statue.
Ooh.
That's where it's like the mime, but you are not allowed to move. You're allowed to adopt one physical pose, which is the representation of the name.
Yes, that is, I like that. I think I have done that, but we just did it in the third round.
Okay.
I once lost a friend over this game, though.
Did you really? What,
yeah,
you fell out with your friend?
No, it's more subtle than that. I'm going to have to...
You killed one of your friends?
We were playing this game, and I was partnered with my friend's partner, who I kind of... We're kind of friends, but not mega close, but I think I'd drunk a little bit too much, and I wasn't impressed with his skills. And I... Because I love this game, and I insulted him for what I think is perhaps the worst insult I've ever said to anyone.
Can you share it, or is it too rude?
No, I just said, you're so, what did I say? I think I said, you're so mediocre.
Oh,
and
damning criticism.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a horrible thing to say to someone.
What is mediocre, though? You're going to have to explain that.
Medium,
one.
Medium, not good or bad, just nothing.
Just like really average, in quality.
I was really so ashamed.
And
that
what
was a mean thing to say.
He
anyway,
was hurt?
I don't know. I can't even be sure I definitely said it loudly enough to be heard. I don't know, but I've never been able to really... Now, whenever I see him, I feel like I'm so nice to him.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just mega nice.
You haven't managed to rekindle.
I meant that he was mediocre at this game.
Right.
But I think there was a little part of me which meant it in a bigger sense.
Really? You, the truth came out. You're like, you're mediocre. And I don't just mean at miming Sherlock Holmes. I mean generally as a human being.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, God, I'm sorry. I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Probably a bit more slurry.
Really?
Anyway, that is a good game. Yeah.
It is. It's a fantastic game. Okay, so where are we? We're playing games.
We're playing games. I've got to go and pick up a baby. So
oh, yes.
The time?
Yes. It's probably getting late. It's 10 to 5.
10 minutes.
You've got 10 minutes. Okay.
Yeah.
So you reckon we can wrap up Christmas in 10 minutes?
Well, it depends how many more games your family play.
I think that's it. I'm sure there's probably something else, but I think that's it. Oh, my granddad, who's no longer with us.
I was going to say, wow.
No, he died a couple of years ago. Anyway, my granddad always had this hilarious thing, which probably you won't find funny. I don't think anyone else in the universe will, but it's one of those family things.
Go for it.
So whenever we were suggesting games, my granddad would say, let's play I can't remember the name of the game. It's like, let's play this game. And it'd be like, what's that one, Granddad? And he would say, right, so everyone... what is it? Everyone closes their eyes and someone leaves the room and we all have to guess who it is. Well, no, not even everyone closes their eyes. It's just like someone has to leave the room and we all have to guess who it is. It's like the most stupid game that doesn't, it's not even fun. There's not even any rules involved. If one person leaves the room, we all have to guess who it is.
Yeah, but there's only like five of you there.
I know, exactly. That's the... Anyway, it's a kind of private
Granddad's
private joke.
Hilarious.
Yeah. So I guess Christmas Day, the 25th, after all the games have been played and all the presents and food and stuff have been done, generally fall asleep in front of a film, don't you?
Definitely. Pop on a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
More drinks.
Yeah.
Sleeping in front of a film and then, supper, a little sort of late supper, and then quite early to bed because you're probably pretty tired.
Indigestion, possibly.
Possibly.
Yeah, that's right. And there's usually for me, my sort of memory of that time late on a Christmas day is people slumped in front of the TV watching, eating chocolate.
Too much chocolate.
Yes. Ferrero Rocher.
And celebrations.
Yeah, that's right. Different kinds of chocolate and alcohol. Toy Story 3 or something on the TV.
Why not?
And the dishwasher going in the kitchen.
Yeah,
you know,
sounds right.
And then sort of early to bed before you kind of pass out on the sofa. Then the next day, Boxing Day, you do it all again.
Yeah.
Pretty much, except that the...
There's not such a big meal.
Yeah.
It's more like a sort of brunch. Leftovers, full English, mm-hmm. a sort of mix of all that.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking, a walk for your family.
Yes, we go for a big walk on Boxing Day usually.
And maybe games, but it depends. Like lots of people are going home, back to wherever.
Yeah.
They might have to sort of... By about 3 or 4, the day is sort of over.
Mm.
And then you're left just with an empty, horrible empty feeling.
That's right. And then you face the bleak few days.
The no man's land between that and New Year's.
That's right. New Year's is the worst. I can't stand New Year's.
It's the worst.
I hate New Year's Eve.
Everyone hates New Year's Eve. It is the worst, absolute worst time of year.
Yeah, because it's the weather's rubbish and everyone's like really jaded by the debauchery of Christmas.
Yeah.
And you really don't want to have to drink any more booze at that point. You know, you just
Peaks
want...
It's too early.
Yeah. And, you know, New Year's Eve, what we do these days is we just stay in. We're really boring.
Oh,
we
yeah.
stay in and we just sort of drink tea and watch a bit of telly and sometimes even go to bed before...
I have done that. Yeah, New Year's is... There is something really nice about waking up on New Year's Day and not feeling shit.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I've had enough experiences of waking up on New Year's Day at 2 p.m. feeling awful.
Awful.
You know, it's when you're younger, because we're getting on a bit now.
Very old, yeah.
When you're younger, New Year's Eve is a massive party night and it's almost an intimidating sort of night for me, because New Year's Eve would mean going out into town, going into Birmingham, mm-hmm. and we lived, you know, out far away. It's like always a mission to get to town
and forget about getting home.
And getting home is a nightmare. You just
nightmare.
No taxis,
not for love nor money.
The buses and trains are all stopped by that point, and you're in a weird state. You're either
and
you're
it's
drunk.
It's much more aggressive. Like whereas Christmas, there's lots of that Christmas carol-y and it's fun, and people are singing in the pub, and they're definitely drinking too much. New Year's is darker.
Yeah, it is.
Everyone's
isn't it?
Feeling a bit darker. It's a bit more aggressive. It's not nice.
Yeah.
You're not friendly in the same way.
I have had some weird New Year's Eves.
Yeah.
Like, I remember once on New Year's Eve coming out of some nightclub and it was all sort of snowy and icy and sort of like negotiating my way through Birmingham with a drunk friend. And he was like really leery and I was trying to keep him on his feet and he kept sort of almost falling into the road and I was like holding him up, and then all of these kind of these bits of sort of what's the word for it, these kind of scenes of other people spilling out of other nightclubs and these kind of all this drunk destruction in the city center. You know, it's that's English New Year's Eve,
especially combined with that feeling of, you know, a year slipped by. What have we done?
Yeah.
You know, making these promises you can't keep. And I heard this one woman saying how she makes her New Year's resolution for September, you know, like the school New Year.
Right.
Because you've got a lot more energy and it feels a lot more possible in September. Because it's true, January, you do have that, what's your New Year's resolution? And you I don't know, and it feels like impossible to eat healthily or not drink or do anything at all in January. It just seems beyond. And so you fail before you start.
Right, yeah.
And then dry January, that's depressing. It should be completely sodden January. I would never, ever.
What do you mean dry
that.
January?
You know, dry January, it's where you don't drink for a month.
Right.
That's what lots of people do, dry January, sort of compensate.
Right, to detox from the...
Yeah, from the excess
of Christmas, the end of December. Yeah, dry January and the bleakness of January.
Yes.
You know, those because that's often the darkest, coldest time of the year in the UK.
Yeah.
You know, and the days are very short and the nights are long and it's cold.
Well, it's been like that for a while, but you've had this sort of build up.
Yeah, you're
starting Christmas, it's exciting. And then once Christmas is gone, all the lights come down and there's nothing to look forward to till summer. And that's very, very, very far away and may not happen.
Yeah,
in England. So, you know.
Yeah, you wake up on New Year's Day facing a kind of at least 3 months of cold, grey, dark kind of weather and stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, as you said, the summer is there in the middle of the year, but often it just doesn't happen because it rains all the way through the summer sometimes.
Well, exactly. You've got January, February, March is still dark and horrible. And it's been like dark, I mean, in the UK especially, like it's dark when you wake up and it's dark by 3:30 in January.
Yeah.
So you just feel like you're living in the dark. It's horrible.
There is this seasonal affective disorder, which is like this genuine disorder. It's this genuine thing that people experience when they don't get enough natural sunlight, and that kind of starts to kick in around January.
Definitely.
And apparently there are days, I think some days in like mid-January that are the worst days for people calling in sick.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which one it is, but it's something like the third Monday of January is like the worst day for the economy because so many people call in sick.
They just can't face it.
They just can't face getting up and going to work on that day.
But we need to find a sort of better, like some sort of celebration, something to look forward to.
Because there's the next celebration after New Year's Day is Valentine's Day, which is also a weird one because it's kind of like this enforced romance. You know.
But that's not great because if you're single, that's worse.
It's
and
miserable
if you are
if you're
with
single.
Someone, I don't know, yeah. But Valentine's Day, it doesn't have that same, you know.
Community feeling, it doesn't have that.
No.
No, it's instead there's just lots of social pressure that if you're with someone, then you have to go out of your way to make it a sort of a forced special romantic evening. And if you're not with someone, then you feel all lonely because you imagine that everyone else is together. The next thing is Easter.
Only for some people.
Only for some people. That's right.
But, I mean, in Easter's, the thing about Christmas is it's so nice because of all the lights. You know, in Denmark and Sweden, and it gets really dark there too.
Yeah.
They put up lots of lights, you know, when it's dark all year. And that's really important, like having these artificial lights. And one of the things that's nice about Christmas are the lights. You know, the streets are all decorated. So I think we need to be cleverer because it's really North Britain.
Yeah.
It does get really dark. So we need more lights. But then the other thing is the family thing. You know, just make more effort to do nice things with our family.
Yeah.
Have you seen that really sad advert?
No.
Oh, it's so sad. It's like this old man and he invites all his family for Christmas and they can't come and he sort of has a lonely Christmas. You know, it's just him with his little hat and a turkey or whatever.
Mm.
And then the next scene, it's all sort of done quite quietly. There's not much speaking. They all get this like little letter, you know, his grown-up children. And they realise that, you know, he's dead. And so they all come dressed in black and then they go and they meet up at his house. And he's not dead. He's just, invited them for Christmas, but he says, you know, they never come. And
right.
So, you know, he sort of pretended to be dead so that they'd all be there and like celebrate Christmas.
The only way he could get his family together was to fake his own death.
Yes, but I mean, the thing is, although that's a bit extreme, there is that sense of like we make this real effort to get together and have these like games and fun, and you know we should do it more often.
We didn't mention the family.
God, are there more games?
The disagreements, because sometimes it goes all horribly, horribly wrong at Christmas.
That is very, very true.
People argue and they fall out with each other, and sometimes it's absolutely awful. There's big arguments.
We've glossed over. We've made it seem just fabulous because your dad is the best.
Yeah,
at Christmas.
It's not always fabulous.
Well, this is the thing. I've spent Christmas with loads of different families, and something that I did notice is people do argue a lot. And I remember thinking once, why am I here? I don't need to be here. This is not my family. Why am I dealing with all this, like,
Tension. Yeah. Now, there's a lot of family tension because it's when the family sort of, you know, as people say, you don't choose your family. You know, you just have these members of your family that you're forced to just spend time with. And sometimes people hate each other. And there's just like this tension that boils over into actual arguments. And
kids become like, you are not a child anymore, but you surely regress. You know, I see adults, people in their 30s and 40s going back home and behaving like children right. with their parents.
Yeah.
And it's incredible to watch, you know, your friends just disintegrate and behave so pettishly. And
so you mean like the kid, these grown people are going, Mum, can I, you know, Mum, James is picking on me or whatever.
More or less. You know, this kind of petulance, like, oh, you know, kind of.
Oh, I didn't ask to be born.
Teenage kind of like sulking and like really overreacting. Yeah, and always do that.
And yeah. And Mum, can I have another beer?
Hugo's always doing that.
Right. Yeah. Well, soon enough. Time.
But overall, Christmas amazing.
Yes, it is a good time. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Yeah. What's your favourite Christmas song?
Favourite Christmas song?
Yep. Have you got one?
No, I don't really. I don't think so. I kind of like the general Christmassy feeling.
Just the sort of the sound of sleigh bells and carol singers in the distance.
What's yours? You tell me one. Maybe
I don't know. I've got a few, but my brother's one is the Wham Last Christmas.
Okay,
it's actually his favourite one.
Actually, all year round.
I've got well, just at Christmas, I think. I think my favourite one is the Paul McCartney. You know the one?
I'm not surprised that it's Paul McCartney.
Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time. Yeah. Just because it's so weird. It's like this weird synth reggae kind of thing. And then just imagine Paul McCartney in a Christmas sweater.
How does it go? Oh, Christmas sweater?
Yeah, yeah,
I didn't
even
mention those.
Yeah, those Christmas sweaters with the awful designs on them.
The ironic Christmas sweater.
Paul McCartney Christmas. It's like, imagine that Paul, some point in the 1980s, has got some bunch of synthesizers together.
Yeah.
He's probably had a few cups of tea or something.
Yeah.
And then he's come out with this extraordinary, weird song. I'm going to try and play it here on my computer.
Yeah, Simply Having a Yeah.
It's actually a tune, I think. The mood is right, the spirit's up. We're here tonight, and that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. I actually really like the track.
It's good.
Yeah, but you know,
like
I'm just a Beatles fan, so
oh, a big Beatles fan. No, yeah. It's good. I think I like it all.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. I love it. All right then.
Okay. Well, I think we've thoroughly dealt with Christmas,
more or less. I think we've thoroughly dealt with that game.
Yeah, the name game.
I think we dealt with that pretty well. I think there's still things in Christmas left untouched.
I'm sure there are things that we've missed. But I would like to appeal to my listeners at this point and say, what do you guys do at Christmas? And do you indeed celebrate Christmas? Because some of them won't.
Or are there any like really weird things? Like the things you don't realise they're weird until you go somewhere else and you're like, what? You don't do this?
Yeah.
Everyone does this.
Like our version of Christmas must be really weird. Like all that drinking. I mean, it's so extreme.
I think everyone does quite a lot of drinking.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Well, I'd like to know what the rest of the world does at this time of year.
The food.
So, yeah, tell us all the weird little details. Now, they might seem ordinary and normal to you, but, you know, we want to know those specific things, the specifics. That's what we want to know about. So let us know, as usual, in the comments section. We'd like to read up on what you guys are doing at Christmas, if you're doing anything. So I guess you've got to go and pick up the little man now.
Yep.
Okay. Great. Well, good.
Good. Well, it's been very nice being on the podcast again.
Thank you so much for, you know, being a guest as usual. It's always a delight to to have you on the podcast.
I'll see you soon.
Absolutely. Yes. Thursday afternoon.
Thursday. Yeah.
In the pub. Brilliant.
Brilliant.
It's perfect. I didn't realise that we'd be in a pub.
It's the best. Well done.
Absolutely. Just a result, that is. Okay, then. All right. So we'll see you on Thursday.
See you Thursday.
So there you go. That was Amber and me talking about our versions of Christmas. What do you think? What are the differences to the ways that you spend Christmas? Share your thoughts in the comments section on the website. Now, there are some other Christmas episodes of this podcast that you might want to enjoy at this time of year, just in case this one isn't enough for you. First of all, there's an episode. Oh, I need to find the numbers of these episodes. Hold on. Okay, so if you look in the episode archive, and in fact, if you look on the page for this particular episode, you'll see all the links there. There was episode number 78. That was called Christmas. It's All About Family, which was a funny conversation with my brother about Christmas and lots of other things too. So there was that one. Then after that, episode number 158 and episode 159, which was A Cup of Christmas Tea with Paul Taylor. That was the first time that Paul was on the podcast. So if you missed Paul's voice in this episode, then you can go back and listen to A Cup of Christmas Tea with Paul Taylor. And then there's episode 160 as well, which was called The A to Z of Christmas. And in that one, I was joined by my friend Raphael from Liverpool, and we basically talked about everything that you need to know about Christmas culture in the UK. Then after that, there was episode number 245, which was called Merry Christmas and More. And that was just a sort of rambling episode with a video about Christmas and a few other things. Then as well, more recently, I did in episode number 320, I basically told the story of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, which is a classic Christmas story, and I told you the entire story in that episode. That's episode 320. And I think that's pretty much it in terms of Christmas-themed episodes that you can enjoy. So there you go. You should now have your fill of Christmas-related content. Here are some other announcements and admin at the end of this episode. So I think I will be uploading probably one more episode before the Christmas holiday properly arrives. So I might wish you a proper Merry Christmas then. But if I don't get the chance to do that, then Merry Christmas. I hope you manage to get all your shopping done, get your gifts wrapped and all your food prepared, and that you have a fantastic holiday, whatever it is that you're doing out there. So Merry Christmas. Now, here's a notification about some news about Luke's English Podcast get-togethers. These are those events that seem to be cropping up in which listeners to this podcast get together and make friends and have conversations in English. I recently announced one that happened in Moscow, and that was a bit of a success. And they are actually having another one. So there's going to be another Moscow Luke's English Podcast Conversation Club get-together. And that is happening this Sunday, the 18th of December, between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. at the Wooden Door Anti-Cafe again. So they're doing it again on Sunday. And that's just in a couple of days after I'm publishing this episode. So Sunday, the 18th of December at 4 p.m. at the Wooden Door Anti-Cafe in Moscow. And you will find the Facebook link and VK links as well on the page for this episode. So go onto those pages and you'll see all the details. And they're planning some sort of special Christmas things. So check out those pages and you can get the details there. All right. Don't forget to add your name and email address to the mailing list, which is probably the easiest way that you can get access to the page for episodes when they are uploaded. So check that out, mailing list. Thank you for your messages. I get lots of messages from my listeners, and I just wanted to say that I appreciate your responses to my work and your messages of thanks. It's always nice to hear from you. If you're feeling festive and generous and you're thinking of expressing your gratitude to me somehow, Then one way you could do that is to make a special Christmas donation to Luke's English Podcast, and you'll find little donate buttons on the pages for each episode on my website. And so if you want to say thanks, then you know you could send a donation. Obviously, it's completely optional. You don't have to, but it may be a nice way to sort of wish me a happy Christmas. And your support for Luke's English Podcast would be greatly appreciated. Let's see. So, as I said, there will probably be another episode of this podcast arriving before Christmas actually happens. So I will speak to you again in that one. And probably when I'm with my family at Christmas, I'm going to try and record something with them. I don't know what that will be at this point, but hopefully I'll find the time to sit down with some members of my family and talk to them about some stuff. I don't know what that will be, but that's what usually happens. So there will be more episodes coming in your direction soon. But for now, for this one, it's just time for me to say again, Merry, Merry, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.